Yeah, we can totally make this work.
I've actually hit the record button. Yeah. Start
that, at that point, then we're going to be able to actually get
game. Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Welcome back to Seize of the GM, everybody.
Yes, indeed.
And curse and fi, and I shake my fist at our recent kind of tech issues. Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
If you're listening to this, hopefully all of our tech issues have actually worked out. We've figured out what's going on. Thank you for letting us know. Thank you for pointing out that there are issues with the production.
Yes.
Especially if those issues are pointed out by using our Facebook group, which you can find at Zendad. What's the address?
Facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
Yeah, but by the way, thank you, Mark. I love you. You're awesome. Super smeg. Just thanks for letting me know. Because it's really cool. He actually is like, I like this. And when the episodes drop, he's like, and then he texts me. And of course, I don't get this right away because I'm working. And he's just like, yeah, the audio is all messed up. It's kind of sync screwy. I'm like, damn it. But,
yeah,
you know, and then he's like, we need to hang out and watch Red Dwarf. I'm like, I like that idea.
Yeah. And we have had some issues with the service that we are using.
Yeah. Things were pretty good for a bit. And then there was internet speed issues and
there was major updates on their end that may have possibly changed how everything was working. So, yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Oh, speaking of new things.
No.
Yes. I'm potentially, well, I'm not even going to say potentially. By hopefully this time next week, I'll have another laptop.
And what are you doing with your old one, Pan?
You are getting fancy.
Give me the tech. I want the tech.
No, this is going to my daughter so she can play ABC Mouse.
As long as she's not playing Nightmare Ned, I think you're fine.
No, this is so that she can do her schoolwork and everything else on it. Because it's not a very powerful laptop. It's pretty old.
Yeah. I'm thinking of actually swapping out my laptop and getting a desktop just so I can swap crap out. But what are you getting? What are you getting?
It's another hand-me-down from my wife, but it's the one that she's currently using that she's only had for a few months.
Okay. This is like a couple of months.
It's an Asus. Yeah. It's fairly new and it's substantially better than what I'm currently using. So, yeah. And hopefully, once we fix the BIOS issue that it has.
That's not a small issue, dude.
It's an Asus issue. There's an issue with the screen blanking from time to time. And it's something that's in there. They have a right around to do it, to fix it and make it work. But it's somewhere in the BIOS that has to be.
Oh, it's a BIOS patch. Okay. It's not It's not a burnt BIOS.
I think so, but no, you actually have to go in.
No, no, no. I've done this before. Dude, I just pulled this. I just pulled a full BIOS upgrade on an ESXi, which is running on a real Linux kernel, and it's a pain in the butt. And it was an intranet, so wait, I don't even have Outward. No, I can help you with this. This is something I know how to do because I just freaking did this.
See,
I'm useful.
So yeah, we'll sit down and we'll figure it out, and we'll get it all fixed. So yeah, this is also why. Remember when we were talking before the show, and I was like, "Ooh, that was what it was." Is I was remembering that I was going to have, because you were asking a very specific question of, "Will your current computer be able to do this thing that you want to do?"
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is that is for anybody that's actually in the Facebook group will know what I'm talking about.
So to keep up on all things. All things Seize the GM and all things that Zendead likes to plan and plot behind the GM screen, steepled fingers included, you know, you have to go to the Facebook group and figure out what's going on, because it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Well, and now that we have done sufficient self-promotion for at least the next 35 minutes, what do we have on deck tonight? What's going on?
Well, we have, we're calling this Leading and Guiding Without Tracks.
Tracks, we're talking about like choo-choo, you know, like train, aka railroading.
Yes.
Yeah, to explain this, if you're not familiar with the phrase, the idea of railroading is when the GM doesn't give players choices. They only have one way to move forward. They only have one way to solve a problem. They are literally stuck on train tracks that are the only way to advance. And kind of the classic example of this is really a dungeon crawl.
Oh, yeah.
Which, for the most part, is a railroaded adventure. There's one entrance. There's one way to keep going. There's one way to solve it. And it can be fun. It can be fun sometimes to just go crack your knuckles, see what's in the next room, and hit it with my axe.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you can also kind of go,
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, also where it also comes like when the adventure goes, quote, off the rails, you know, so, and you still have to kind of guide your players back because, you know, it's a guide. I have no idea why trains got so much push in gaming terminology, but meh.
Well, I mean, if you remember my previous stat block, I mean, the watches that those conductors used just kind of opened up all sorts of problems.
Yeah, they do.
But yeah, there's a balance in mm-hmm. gaming. There is a collaborative part of telling the story, which involves both the players and the GMs. And so how do you as a GM ensure that the part you want to tell isn't just mm-hmm. passive, but at the same time doesn't force or constrain or really limit those players?
Your players need agency in their own characters and their games, and you need to give them that, or at least the illusion of that, you know. You know, it's like pretty much it's the,
that's actually a really good point.
You can either sometimes even just the illusion of agency, you know, just for that wee little bit, just so they pick up that magical MacGuffin, and then that's the hook for the end. I mean, there's ways to do it subtly, and you don't want to do this gross, like grab, push.
Yeah, and the illusion, all games technically have, there's a beginning, middle, and end. It's a story. Now, how all of those pieces kind of fit, the way I always describe it is a traditional, mm-hmm. like, dungeon crawl is A to B, B yep. to C, C to D. Okay. The way I run a game is more like A, and then there's a fan of there's this path you can go, this path you can go, this path you can go, this path you can go. And then once you make that next step, it's, oh, and then there's these that you can do. Now, at any point, you can also go back to any of the previous points.
Yeah, but it's so called it's more branching of a web. Path. In game design, it's branching path versus linear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I referred to as planning set pieces and not paths. How the players want to get from these important components is really up to them.
Well,
but what you've done is set, you know, there have to be these pieces. You know, there have to be this moment, this moment, how they get there. And I'll go back to Shadowrun. You've heard us talk about it a lot. This is kind of the idea of Shadowrun GMing. You know what information is held that the players need, how they get it. Well, they've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Mm-hmm. Shoot, give me a good player build. I got a dozen ways to get that information.
Yeah.
Don't try to second guess it. Just know it's there. Yeah. And you can always adjust. Get to it. Let the PCs decide how to navigate.
Yeah. So, you know, from hacking, you know, one place to get the information, to finding a local street thug that might have seen something, to having one of the PCs seduce someone. God damn it, birthday boy. Ugh. No, but the thing is, like, there are certain things that they need to get, how they get them. And the thing is, like, and here's the best thing. There's nothing wrong with, you know, if they went to the first place and it didn't work, you know, it's like, sometimes it's like, all right, they didn't get it the first way. That's cool to do. You know, you don't always have to give it to them on the first try, too, because sometimes the searching is fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, all these ideas, all the things we're going to suggest on how to, as a GM, guide a story without hamstringing your players required some flexibility, some openness, and maybe a little bit of trickery as well. And so here's one of my big ideas. Set the theme for the campaign and let that be what you contribute as a GM. Decide on the big picture theme. Decide what you want to focus on and where it starts. And then just have enough to give your players something to work with. Is this about order and chaos? Is this about how a growing empire deals with new territories? Is this about being conquerors, about being conquered? Let that theme permeate where you end up. And then shape that campaign just a step ahead of the PCs. Yeah.
And the thing is...
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I've done. I've done this in the past is I've had, you know, like characters have interacted with various NPCs in different capacities. And like, I'll take what I would like to be the end villain and let them see him very early. Let them interact with him or her very early and get the players to do something to that NPC so that he has motivation for why he's going after them, because they did this to him. They did it, not anyone else. And I've actually had run an entire campaign before where they had a villain that was constantly messing with them, but they could not figure out who it was.
I did something similar in a Champions game where there was this one plucky ninja who kept getting knocked down, but never quite knocked out in what the adventure I called the Night of a Million Bajillion Ninjas.
That is great.
It's a comic book based. It's a night of comic book based superhero ninjas, and
there. Oh, yeah,
you remember when I talked about zombies and how you could have, you know, a pack of zombies as one stat block? When a dozen ninja are one stat block.
Well,
it's a lot of fun, and then you just go wooksia. But this one plucky ninja who kept getting back up and kept getting knocked down came back 5 sessions later with a whole new set of gear he got from somebody else and was one of the most frustrating, one of the absolute most frustrating people that they ever had to deal with, because exactly what they used against him was what he bought tech to fight against.
Yeah, so by the
thing
end-
is like also God bless. I love my sheriff in my Deadlands game. I love her to death. She's the awesomest. And I learned a lot from her because this is what she does is she has notes upon notes on, you know, pretty much if this was a linear story game, she writes that out. But the thing is, she has like branching things out of here. This is a possible way they might go off. And here is how certain things would happen. So it's like instead of she told a story where one of the guys, it was a Herald. OK, in Deadlands, that's a guy that you have a Manitow, a.k.a. kind of sort of evil spirit in your body. You're dead. Your soul and his soul are always fighting for control of the body. And he was having blackouts and pretty much they went to this town and everyone's looking at him, giving him the stink eye. And he has no idea. He doesn't remember this town. He has no idea this whole thing. So, and she had written up this entire ways of where all the clues were, the investigations, all this other things, da, 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 da. So here's the what she did is, you know, so he's like, all right, you're in this town. What do you do? And he's like, the guy was actually a religious. Okay. He was very, very faithful. First thing he does is go to the priest and bypassed all this other investigation stuff. She's like, okay. So about six, you know, she has like a bajillion pages are gone, but the priest was, she had mentioned it just in case of a hook. So when you're writing up, say if you're writing up, you have an adventure of kind of where you want him to go and what you want him to do.
Yeah.
Write it up in your mind as what you would do linearly and then put it aside and then come back and okay, where are the hooks where they could go another way? What would happen if they did? And what would I do? It's kind of like, you know, like the branching thing that you do. But if you have like a base, like a possessed town or you have a horrible monster that only comes out, you know, at supper time or something like that. Well, what would you expect them to do? Like in, like if you're doing like in a video game or board game.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if you were trying to do this kind of sideways, what would you do? It helps you figure out. Because your basic outline is not going to survive against your players. They're going to come up.
Oh, no. It's like all good battle plans. As soon as it makes contact with anything, you throw it out and start over.
Yeah. Because because we were doing, it wasn't Mercurial. It was... Oh, what was the one we were doing after Mercurial?
We're not going to say because...
No. It was... We were planning some, and it's supposed... There was... No, because I actually ran Mercurial for some guys at work. And I'm trying to remember what we were doing afterwards. I might have run Food Fight. I think it might have been Food Fight. And Food Fight's supposed to be this big, you know, fighting in Stoffer Shack.
Yeah.
One guy built a social adept. And no food fight.
Yeah.
Completely racked it. But the thing is, though, that, okay, but I could still build the tension. I could still give that feel, you know, yeah, let's do this. But you have to be able to, you know, we can make it as like, okay, quarter circle back, ad hominem, kind of a, all right, I'm being silly here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's just it.
I say that kind of goes into some of my don't discard the notes ideas and the doodly-doo and ties into what Zen was saying. PCs are going to go off the rails. There's always going to be that one player who just wants to go over the hill at the edge of the map you made.
Or everyone might collaborate and come up with an idea you didn't think of because, you know, like if someone's analytical, I'll come up with something analytic, but we put in Garde-Manger, who's got a background in theater and the dramatic, which is awesome. But might come up with something different because where do you see it from?
Well, and don't scrap your notes when that happens. That's okay.
Right.
Keep them.
Because
keep
you them can
thought.
Still mm-hmm. pull stuff out
you
of
can
them.
Look through it.
The example in the doodly-doo. The example in the doodly-doo. You've got a plot thread sitting there. of parents whose child are missing in a fantasy setting, and your players decide not to worry about going and figuring out what's happening. So that idea you had about a little orc raider band having kidnapped the kid, put it in your back pocket. A couple of sessions down the road, for whatever reason, maybe they leave the town, maybe it just decides it's time, there's a larger orc horde now that they didn't stop when they could have because of that kid that's showing up. And it plays into that idea of setting that theme. Is this about civilization versus the untamed wild? Is this about encroaching on existing civilizations? Whatever it is, that missing kid that could have let him find the orc band is now an orc horde they've got to deal with. And it looks like you planned it all out.
Well, and yeah, what I was just going to say is what it actually does when you do things like that is it makes your world feel alive because things are growing, things are changing. Like, we'll do an entire episode just on villains because we need to do one.
Oh, do we ever.
But one thing that I do with my villains is I have their arc. I know their arc. And where it intersects with the PCs are those chances where they have to stop it before he gets to the end. And if at any point they jump the gun and they get to him before he gets to the end, I kind of know where he's at. So they could theoretically stop him before he gets to the end.
But you still know where he's at, so it still would be a decent story. It's not kind of like...
Exactly.
It's not like they defeat the villain and then there's no repercussions from beating the villain. So what if he was a bad guy and he already got the gang together, you know? But they haven't made the plan for the big heist and the heroes come in and stop it. Well, now you have a group of ne'er-do-wells sitting there.
Exactly.
And they might start a gang war. Or another guy might come up as leader. Or... infighting, who knows?
When you read the show notes, the doodly-doo, that's the ending be determined in play. The fact that you know what the forces are moving around the PCs means when the PCs take action, you can figure out how they react. And if it leaves a shattered husk, a power vacuum that has to get filled, well, you know what the next campaign is. If it leaves, like Jules was saying, an organized group of ne'er-do-wells sitting there, that's something else.
Oh, yeah.
If it's about two rivals, two countries, two corporations, two whatever, does it matter to your universe in your head which one wins? Or does it matter that the PC's actions will tip the scale? And from that, they can feel an impact on the universe that makes you look wonderful by saying, oh, look, you did something to my wonderful world, and it's about you.
Yeah. And that is really what it should be about, is empower your players with doing this, because you can really well by not just go to room one, okay, read box text, fight the monster. Okay, you go to room two, read the box text, fight the monster. You know, you don't want to. There's a lot of people that have done this, and we've all done it. Their teeth.
And sometimes you still want to do it, but
yeah,
maybe give them a T intersection instead of just a door.
Yeah, but this is where like. A dungeon crawl is technically a web. It is a web design because they can go in and they have one in, one out. But inside of that, it's very open. They can go around. They can find all the places. If they want to go straight to the bad guy at the end, they can go and find just that one last bad guy. Go as far in as they can go and assume that that door is the one that the bad guy's behind. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. maybe the bad guy's in the first room.
Well, this is one of those debates I've actually had with other GMs, especially when we talk about next week, the different styles of preparation and how you deal with everything you have to do. The amount to which you can actually set that larger theme, the amount to which these stories can be told without railroading your players. And so keep in mind that you have, as a GM, the most control over the 30,000-foot view. Your ability to shape the world happens best at that level. Yeah. And let the PC's actions shape it. The more granular it gets and the story you tell comes from that interplay.
And starting at the beginning, you know, and starting at the beginning, as you said, you do have the highest view. So you have the widest view. And as their actions, you get to start focusing in more and focusing in more and focusing in
more. And that's
more.
What you should be doing. Is as it goes,
it's kind of hard
focusing more and more on what they're doing, and the story will tell itself if you have a decent outline for this is what I would like the game to be about, and let the players really, if you let them have true agency and they can literally go anywhere, then. If you can make it work, you will look like a god to them.
Oh, yeah. But don't be, here's the thing though, also, as you are doing this, you know, as we've always said in every episode, communication is key. And as if you're, this is the first time you're behind the GM screen, ask the, you know, have your PCs speak up if they start feeling a little railroady. And PCs, and you're playing, and if you say, yeah, we're feeling a little railroady, and tell your GM why, if they're a brand new GM, because they might not see it as railroady. You know, they might, you know, but, you know, you're going to have to tell me just, I feel railroaded. Why? It's just, because I do. That's not going to help them. But if you said, it's just like, you know, from the beginning, we were all in a jail cell, one dude, you know, it was like we couldn't fight back. We couldn't talk to the guard. We couldn't do anything. When we were let out, we were kind of like forced, and then brought before the king and told we must do this. Okay, I can. It's a rudimentary and it's a rough start. But all right, continue with it. But then your GM has learned that okay, that kind of stuff. You know, like the opening to Oblivion in. You know, the Elder Scrolls game, it feels very railroady.
Yeah.
But then, like, okay, but then everything branches out and you can take all the different quests you want. And heck, for all you want, you can ignore the main quest if you wanted to. But the thing is, like, they GMs need feedback and players need feedback. So here, if you're a new GM and you're trying out and...
Ask them how the game went
and what they liked. And if you're feeling nervous about being railroady or not being assertive enough in guiding it, ask your players for feedback and you give, and some of it might be, well, some of it might feel brutal. It's probably not because we're all here to have fun. And then, you know, take it, digest it, and then talk to them afterwards. It's like,
if you're worried about getting honest feedback, set up a use Google. Google Docs is a wonderful tool or a similar product, and set up an anonymous poll or an anonymous submission account that allows you to collect feedback from your PCs that way.
Yeah.
And they can tell you if they felt railroaded, if it wasn't comfortable. They can tell you that without necessarily having to attach their name if they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
It would be better, in my opinion, if they could tell you face to face and say, hey, I don't think this is working and here's why. But that's not always the case.
No.
And so remember and that flexibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay. And that's why we have tools to work with. Flexibility, openness, maybe a little trickery, and focus on your 30,000 foot view. Focus on the theme over the specific actions.
Yeah.
And that's the best way that you can lead and guide without just railroading your players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But as we're kind of going to try to wrap this here. There is so much in just this concept of...
We'll come back and do another episode on this in the future. But for now, guess what
we're going to say like next? Crazy?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, share with us on the Facebook group or on Twitter how you as a GM kind of guide or lead without railroading your players. Or if you're a player, tell us a really good example of when a GM has, well, stuck you on tracks and you weren't happy so the rest of us can learn from that. Or that after the fact you look back and realize they kind of nudged you where you wanted to go.
They're not forcing you to go down the path, but you know, it's like, hey, look at that one. That has less cobblestones and I'm less likely to twist my ankle. That might be more fun. All right.
Yeah.
So we're not, this topic goes a lot deeper. So we'll put a pin in it. And if you want us to go deeper in different subjects, you let us know. Like I said, communication is key, not just in your game, but for our show, because we want to help you guys run good games. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's go ahead and roll on into that stat block. And now we enter stat blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight. Not it.
Yay! What? What do you mean, not it? You don't get to do not it.
Haha, see?
Yay!
Not it.
I'm going to go ahead and go first. I'm volunteering. My stat block is actually about implementing ways to use what we just talked about in your story. My stat block tonight's about the last scrap of humanity. As humankind has expanded across the continent, planet, or maybe even beyond, depending on your setting, there's always a chance that they lose something of themselves. The last scrap of humanity is a record of what was human before the expansion, the growth, and the changes that happened. The problem is that not everyone wants a reminder of what once was, and will go to great lengths to stop it from getting out. Let the players hunt for this scrap of humanity, this tether to the past across locations they have seen before in your game. Reuse everything and every place they've been before. Leave them clues to backtrack and search for what their employer truly wants. I mean, it can't be that far away, right? The PCs will eventually figure out where the last scrap is, and let them figure it out however they do, but make sure there is something you hold back. You see, the last scrap of humanity is a human child. He or she may have gotten to the age of, we'll say 10, but the oral storytelling history he or she has shows the past in vibrant, descriptive, and unique terms. What will the PCs do? Now they have to face the question of what they value, whether to share this golden or terribly human past with the world, to take this child and run, possibly making an entire new campaign, or fulfill their job and turn this child over to someone or something that may have other plans for humanity's future once the past is safely locked away.
Nice.
Wicked. Oh, you monster.
That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, this is about how to put those ideas into play. Revisit your old locations. Let the PCs figure out where it is. Leave them a choice that underlies a larger theme, a larger moral quandary.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. So here we go. So, the Cult of the Void. Also simply known as the Void by people in the know, they're a very quiet group that has been run quietly and in the shadows for decades. How large are they? Who's controlling them? What is their larger agenda? these are the questions people that have looked into this secret group have asked. Do they know? Hard to say, since anyone that's not a full member that goes digging has never been able to get that information out about them. They have a dress code for when they are out and doing the deeds that they do. It is a white robe with a hood and a white face cover with a single black inverted triangle in the center of the face. The current leader might be anyone, but as of right now, investigators are looking at this group for a number of missing teens and young adults from the nearby towns. While people have thought that their membership may have been growing, no one's really sure, and the missing teens could be converted or just missing, possibly even runaways. But what do they want? Well, ask them. They're right outside your door. And they've surrounded your house. The power's out. And communication seems to be dead.
Sorry, you gave me a creep factor and I didn't...
You should have had that during the lower ones.
Oof. That, yeah. You the hibbly-jibblies for strong bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I guess the last one is me, right? Huh?
That falls to you.
I can't follow up that, dudes. Come on. Yeah, but I'm.
Let's just put it this way. This one's
it's weird. So, okay.
Hey.
All right. This one is called the Deck of Moiré. At the end of the final quest, each great legend was bound to record their life's journey. The events of their life, both meritus and vile, recorded in cards and sealed as a deck, and then the deck is buried with them. Over aeons, some of these decks were unearthed. And now they serve as a powerful divining tool, or really, as a test of worth. Those that were born under a mystic sign or portent or event often face the deck of Moiré as a rite of passage. It is already known that this person has a destiny, but facing the deck will give that person a great insight and possibly a choice. The person chooses one of the many decks and then deals the cards. When the cards are dealt, they now face the life within. Some people may gain insight into their future, seeing where the legends stumbled, and they swear not to make the same mistake. Some may see virtues that they wish to emulate. Even others may see the quickest path to power and follow in the footsteps of a tyrant. And this is the standard experience that most people have with the Deck of Moiré. But in the rare case, a very unique individual tried to change the story within the cards. Rather than be a passive observer, they will actively try and change the fate of the long-dead legend. They may try and redeem a fallen hero, corrupt a saint, or kill a tyrant. Usually those that try and change the story within the Deck of Moiré fail, and the strain ends up killing them. But sometimes, just sometimes, they'll succeed. They change the legend's story through the strength of their own will. When this happens, the deck is destroyed and the change of fate shatter around the legend's soul in the afterlife. The legend's soul is now free to reincarnate back to the normal realm and to try again. Afterwards, a new deck materializes in the victor's possession. A Rasa Deck of Moiré. Each card is blank. You see, for these rare people, they are the lucky few who are now free to write their own destiny.
Fun.
I don't know why you're worried about going last.
It's because that wasn't the original one that I was coming up with. You know what I mean? You know how it goes.
You're good. All right.
We'll work on this. See, you're going to be less concerned as we get on.
It's not quite exactly that. It's more of I'd started writing one and because of situation outside of my control, I ended up writing that. So. Hey. All right. So.
Let's flip into,
shall we roll into the next one? Yeah.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary. All right.
I haven't looked, so I promise.
It's not that strange of a word. Okay. It is parallax.
You just brought up parallax to the astronomy nut here.
Yeah.
Stellar parallax. That they used that originally to, bunny rabbit ears, prove that the Earth's with the center and the stars didn't move. Because if they did, we'd see stellar parallax.
So, the...
It's also defined as, you know, the DC Comics mistake regarding Hal Jordan in the 90s.
The official definition, of which there is only a single one, is the apparent displacement or the difference in apparent direction of an object as seen from two different points, not on a straight line with the object, especially the angular difference in direction of a celestial body as measured from two points on the Earth's orbit. Now, it is originally from, let's see here. It looks like it is originally from two different Greek words, but the only one that really matters is parallaxis, which is, you know, that. And then it went to Middle French, which is parallaxy, and then to parallax. So, and it was first known to be used in that actual context in 1580.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it is nice. Actually in the bottom 30% of words. So, little tidbit there.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually started putting that in all of them now. So in the show notes, it shows up as what percentage of the top or bottom the word falls in. So, but yeah, I think that we're going to go ahead and roll into our closing remarks here. And then we will call this done. So, what do you got?
Me? All right.
Sure.
Okay. As probably everybody bloody well already knows, I am a huge fan of Shadowrun. And there is a totally sweet-ass sweet Shadowrun Twitch live stream that happens every other Monday. It's Shadowrun Anarchy meets Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's called Join the Anarchy. Oz is the GM, and usually I think it's three core players, and then they bring guests on. And here's the cool thing. The mission, nobody knows because it's suggested by the audience. The guest comes in, but their character sheet isn't completely done. You get that from the Twitch livestream audience. Monsters, Twitch livestream audience. Zippy was on it the day before Halloween, and one of his piece of gear suggested by the live stream was a chainsaw codpiece. So wow. It's fun, it's funny, it's quick-witted, it's part of the Shadowcasters network, you know, which is kind of cool. But Oz is a brilliant, brilliant improv GM. If you guys want to see what having a very, very just loose idea of how to craft a story and then getting random things and then he mixes it into it. He's one of the best examples I have ever seen.
I got to play Anarchy with him in person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
By the time this airs, there is one episode left in Seize the GM's first season. And it's every other Monday. And so
not Seize the GM, Join the Anarchy.
Join the Anarchy. We're on Seat the GM. Join the Anarchy has one episode left. And it's going to be coming up
finale.
In a week and a half from when this drops for the whole season finale. And you should listen. And they're bringing together everything that's happened to these players over these improv stories over the last year. They're bringing back PCs or guest stars to help them in the episode, which you missed by about 3 days, and the one coming up. But here's the thing about Join the Anarchy.
They post the episodes on YouTube afterwards. So if you're behind, you can go watch it.
You can catch up.
And they're funny. They've had Vox. They've had Mr. Johnson.
They've had Opti, Russell Zippy Zimmerman. Toe-tag. They've had amazing improv players, amazing Shadowrun people.
Yeah. And it's a hoot and a half. So, you know, if you can, then, and I'm wondering what he's going to be doing for season two, but the other reason I recommend is
they're going to take a break first and do a Court of Shadows interlude before they get to season two. And that excites me. But
thing is,
we're getting off track.
Yeah. For just my thing is for improv GMing, the guy is one of the best, and you can see, you can actually watch in real time his techniques for it. So I recommend it. Yeah. And you'll laugh. And don't we all need that?
Yes,
so we Zen,
do.
You're up. Sorry.
Yes, we
all right,
do.
Zen.
Okay, well, what do I have? This is going to be really... You know what? I'm reading a book. And I haven't done a book one in a while because it's been kind of hard for me to sit down and read lately. So it's called The Ghost Files by April Baker.
That's a new one.
And you can get it for free on Amazon. Ooh. And it's the first book of a trilogy, but I'm about almost halfway. And I haven't really tried real hard to read on it. And I've chewed through, like, I'm in chapter 12 already. So it goes pretty fast, but it's a lot of fun. And it's this girl who sees ghosts, but it's kind of like she's young. She's like in high school still. And it's kind of weird that I would be reading something like that. But I wanted something that was horror light. And I kind of found it. And it was kind of fun to read. So it's been interesting to say the least. So yeah, so that's mine. It's a book. Go out and read it. It's fun. And fairly light. So, what do you got, Gardemange?
Well, one of the things I've been doing is catching up on the Netflix show Mindhunter.
I've heard of this.
Oh, do you not know about this show?
No, I don't.
This show is set in the 70s and is a retelling of the origin of criminal profiling. It charts the history of how the Behavioral Sciences Unit in the FBI evolved into the modern criminal profiling unit that we know today. It is based off of a book by the same name by someone who was there and who is fictionalized as one of the characters in that story. It is a beautifully made period piece for the 70s, and if you're intrigued by psychology, criminal psychology, abnormal psychology, criminal profiling, or the history of the FBI, I highly recommend it.
Cool.
Sweet.
Cool. That's fun. Yeah, I saw it the other day and I'm just like, that sounds interesting.
All right, I'm one of those geeks who actually knows this story, knows, you know, the things that are going to happen as big set pieces as part of it, because I literally am looking at the book on my bookshelf to the left of the computer right now. I'm looking at the other books the same guy authored, including the other person who's the main character. I'm looking at all of those, and I still want to watch every episode.
That's cool. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
Sweet.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for hanging out with us this week on Seize the GM and listening to our attempts to help you as a GM give some guidance to a story without leaving your players feeling railroaded.
Yes, indeed. So until next week, have a good one, folks.
Enjoy yourselves.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0, unported license.